Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So another anuchet is beginning, 48. We're continuing to discuss how he has his limbs, he has his body, and the body has parts, but they're not like the limbs of an ordinary body. Tasmad vilakshana pani padadi twainaiva apani padadi twam yataha. Therefore, is having no hands, no feet, and so on, is in the sense of his having unique hands, feet, and so on. The Upanishad tells us he has no hands and feet. That's to be properly understood. He doesn't have material hands and feet. This is as stated. Statement by Rukmini speaking to Krishna. Twak shma shru roma naka kesha binadham antar mam sasti rakta krimi vit kapavitta pavatam jivat chovam bhajati kanta matirvi mudha yate padabja makarandam jignrati stri. A woman who fails to relish the fragrance of the honey of your lotus feet becomes totally befooled, and thus she accepts as her husband or lover a living corpse covered with skin, whiskers, nails, head hair, and body hair, and filled with flesh, bones, blood, parasites, feces, mucus, bile, and air. Atra Sri Bhagavati Kesha Dinam Shruyamananam Ananda Sarupa Twam Anyesham Twabhava Eveti Vailakshanyam Spashtameva. In this statement, the distinction is made. It's made obvious that the hair and so on of the personality of Godhead, as we hear descriptions of them, belong to his ecstatic self, while those of other persons are not so. Ananda Sarupa Twam. He has hair and other things, parts of his, components of his personal body, but they belong to his Ananda Sarup, his transcendental identity, which is full of bliss. Other people have hair and bodily organs, and that belongs to their Nirananda Asarupa, their material bodily identity, which is not blissful. So there's bibhatsa rasa is being manifest in this verse, this mood of disgust, comparing Krishna's body to anybody else's body. That is the difference. He's got a body, but it's not like anybody else's body. Ata eva hiranyakashipum prati tanmaraka jana nisheda lokshana brahmavadanam api sangachate. Thus the benediction given to Hiranyakashipu, denying that there would be anyone capable of killing him, makes coherent sense. Vyasubir va sumadbir va Sudas Mohoda Gai Iti. You will not be killed by those who are dead or alive, by gods, demons, or great serpents. Okay. That he's going to be killed by someone who's not dead or alive? Yes, is not alive, who doesn't have a material body in the ordinary sense. Nachaitad paranasya nisheda param kintu kartur eva kartri prakaranat apranibi pranibir veti uktes tasyaiva praptatvat. These words are not the words that Brahma has promised. You won't be killed by anybody who's alive or dead, by any god, demon, or great serpent. These words are not meant to deny any senses in the person who's going to kill Hiranyakashipu, but to deny a doer, since it is the question of a doer that is under discussion. And since from the idea by non-living or living beings, only that much can be inferred. What does that mean? Okay. What Hiranyakashipu is trying to ascertain that nobody will be able to kill me. Nobody will be the killer, the doer of my killing. So okay, how does Lord Vishnu fit in not being a doer? Let's see. Let's see what the commentary says. Huntur jiva deha samyepi saprana bhagan nishkrantasya kartaniya nakagra bhagasya tyakta prana twat cha. And furthermore, the body of Hiranyakashipu's killer appears like that of a finite living being, to the extent that the part of his body used to cut apart the demon, namely the tip of his nails, was deprived of life, being separate from the mass of his body, supplied with vital air. Okay, the what killed Hiranyakashipu was the fingernails, which aren't alive. I'm still confused about the previous statement here that these words of Brahma are meant to deny that there's a doer. Okay, nobody's going to be his killer, but actually there's a loophole that Vishnu will be the doer in some special sense. Let me see if it's straightened out in the commentary. Commentary. The beauty of Krishna's body, including his hair, is glorified in Srimad Bhagavatam and in the writing of many Vaishnav poets. Sri Shukadev, for example, describes Krishna returning home to his father's village after he killed the demon Dhenuka. Tam gora jas churita kundala badha bara Vanya prasuna ruchidekshana charuhasam Renum kwanantam anugayar upagita kirtim Gopyo didriksha dadrisho bhyagaman sameta. Lord Krishna's hair, powdered with the dust raised by the cows, was decorated with a peacock feather and forest flowers. The Lord glanced charmingly and smiled beautifully, playing upon his flute while his companions chanted his glories. The gopis all together came forward to meet him, their eyes very eager to see him. So here, the beauty of Krishna's hair covered with the dust from the cow's hoof prints is being described. He's got hair, and that hair is a odipana, or it's a means of becoming attracted to him. Okay, now getting to Hiranyakashipu's request not to be killed by anybody. In Hiranyakashipu's entreaty to Brahma for the boon of immortality, the question under discussion was about the doer of a particular action. In other words, Hiranyakashipu wanted to be assured that no one would be able to kill him. Nobody would be the doer of the act of killing him. Unfortunately for him, Brahma could not give Hiranyakashipu exactly what he wanted, because even the chief engineer of the universe is not empowered to award immortality. Brahma could only answer yes to each separate stipulation proposed by his client. Hiranyakashipu asked him that no being, living or dead, would be able to kill him. But as formulated, this does not imply anything about whether the living beings who did not kill him would possess senses or not. What? Anything about whether the living beings who did not kill him would possess senses or not. The Supreme Personality of Godhead and every part of him is eternally alive. It seems from what Sri Jiva says here, however, that technically speaking, the Lord's hair and nails of his hands and feet this is a little ungrammatical. The hands and feet of the Lord's. Okay, technically speaking, technically speaking, the hair and nails of the Lord's hands and feet do not have breath flowing through them in the same way as does the rest of his body. Okay. I'm sorry? I'm looking at that. I'm not sure what it means. Is that what you're asking? It doesn't make sense?
When he asked for the boon, he did not ask, I don't want to be killed by anybody who does not have senses.
I see. That's what it means.
I mean, that's what I understood from what's written.
Yeah. It's a little confusing the way it's said. Anyway, I'll go back and fix it. Yes, he asked that nobody alive and also nobody dead could be the doer of his killing. Brahma said, okay. But he didn't say that maybe somebody who's not in either of those categories, who's not alive and not dead, that you can find somebody. And you didn't say that he can't have senses. So we're going to find Lord Vishnu. Okay, you could say, argue that he's completely alive. Everything about him is alive. But he's going to use his fingernails, which technically speaking aren't alive. And you didn't say anything in your stipulation about ruling out that he's not allowed to have any senses. So he's going to come and kill you. Like that. Okay, any other questions about this paragraph?
I think there's a letter missing there in the word. It's the third line from the bottom.
In the commentary or the text?
No, in translation. Hiranyakashipu's killer appears or appeared, should be.
Okay. Furthermore, the body of Hiranyakashipu's killer
actually appeared or appears.
Yeah.
And I want to question, if this is what the...
Appeared, I'll make it past tense, appeared, okay. Yeah, what else?
If Jiva Goswami is arguing that Hiranyakashipu was trying to prevent a doer from killing him, not a sense of a doer killing him, so how could that bar any living entity, because all of them are different from the senses? In other words, even if a lion came to kill him, for instance, a regular material lion, the doer is separate from the body of the lion, so the body was still, according to the stipulation he put forth, was still allowed to kill, even though the doer didn't do it, really. So how...
The lion...
For instance...
The lion's body can kill him, even though the lion
can't?
Yeah,
if I understand properly what Jiva Goswami is arguing here, or line of argument he is...
But the lion is alive, by ordinary definition of life.
Uh-huh.
You know, is somebody going to argue a lion is not alive because he's a material entity? No, according to ordinary science, lions are studied by biology, not by chemistry, because they're alive. A lion is alive. So if the lion kills him using his body, that's not fair. He's alive, and he was promised nobody alive would kill him.
And when Lord Vishnu came, he's not alive and he's not dead, is it? So what's the argument here? I'm just trying to understand.
Okay, let me mark your question, because I'm also confused about this. I'm going to write that down, what you just said. Let me make a comment. But okay, I marked it. I'll try to figure it out. I can't figure it all out right now. All right. We have a problem here, but I'll have to work on it. Anything else? Yes.
I don't know if it's correct. Can we accept that Lord, he's alive? Or whenever we speak about somebody who is alive, we imply that he must have some material senses, because he needs them in order to live in this world. So when we speak about Lord, that he is not alive, can we imply that he is not alive in the sense that he doesn't have material senses, but he has spiritual senses?
Well, having material senses, you may say, is a consequence of being alive. Because he's... But it's two different ideas. Why not say, let me not be killed by anybody who has senses, if that's what you really mean? Anyway, I'm confused with this. I can't answer, because I haven't figured it out yet. I have to stare at this for a few hours to figure it out and look at the commentary of Baladev Vidyabhushan again. All right. Let's just move on. This paragraph is left not completely clear, at least those two sentences. I'll just move on to 48.2. Tasmad asmakam aprano yamanak shubra iti asya mahato bhutasya nikshvasitam etat iti cha shutir na sangateti. Thus, as far as we are concerned, there is no inconsistency in the two statements of Shruti. He is pure, without vital air, and without mind. Aprano, hi amanak shubraha. And the other that statement is from the Mundaka Upanishad. And there's another statement from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. This is the breathing of the Supreme Person. Well, so one Shruti is telling us he doesn't have any air, any life air. And the second Shruti is talking about the Vedas and the other Vedic literatures coming from his breathing that he doesn't, that he's not supposed to have. Okay, but this is not contradictory. We understand he doesn't have material life air, but he's got his own breathing, transcendental life air. Ata eva optam varahe natasya prakrita murtir medo majasti sambhava na yogitvad ishvaratvat satya rupo chyuto vibhu iti. Therefore it is said in the Varaha Purana, he does not have a material form made of fat, marrow, and bones. The infallible, all-pervading one has an absolute real form, an absolutely real form, not because he's a yogi, but because he is the Supreme Lord. So he doesn't have a Prakrita Murti made out of bones and fat, but he has a satyarupa, a transcendental form. And he doesn't have a transcendental form by virtue of practicing yoga, but just because he's the all-pervading Supreme Lord. Tat cha prakrita murtitvam tasya maha yogitvat iccha kritam iti na kintu ishvaratvat nityam evetyartaha. In other words, his having a non-material form is not affected by his desire. That's a problem. Is that the result of? The result of his desire. Oh, boy. Let me make a note. The words here are awkward. I just want to. Okay, I'm going to read it again, although I want to change these words to something that doesn't sound so awkward. In other words, his having a non-material form is not caused by his desire on the strength of being a great yogi, but rather that form is eternal by virtue of his being the Supreme Lord. The argument can be presented as follows. Tata cha prayogaha. Prayoga here means a logical argument. Ishvarat savigraha jnane cha prayatnavat kartvitvat kulaladi vat. The Supreme Lord, this is the logical argument. The Supreme Lord has a body because he is a performer of action who has consciousness, desires, and endeavors. That's the reason. Example, like a potter or other performers of action. Okay. Somebody, in other words, the argument is anybody who's got consciousness, desires, and endeavors can be called a performer of actions. And we have example of people who have such consciousness and desires and activities, they're called actors. So the Lord, Supreme Lord, he's got a body. Oh, I see. His being a performer of action, like the potter, means he's got a body. The potter has a body. Everybody else you know who does things and has desires and thoughts has a body. Supreme Lord also has desires, thoughts, and does things. Therefore, he must have a body. Satcha vigraho nityaha ishvara karanatvat tad jnanadi vat iti Ata eva vilakshanatvam api. And this body of the Supreme Lord is eternal, since it is an instrumentality of the Supreme Lord, just like his consciousness and so on. It's something that he uses, like his consciousness, is a quality of his. All of his qualities are eternal. Everything he has is eternal. So if he has a body, that body must also be eternal. In this way, his body is also unique. Jivachavam iti chaitanya yogena jivantam svatas tushavam. The phrase living corpse, that goes back to Rukmini's talking about the husbands of other wives. They're like living corpses. What that means, it indicates that a material body is alive by the connection of living consciousness, but by itself, it's a dead corpse. Everybody else's body. Tatak Shri Bhagavad Vigrahas Tu Chid Eka Rasatvat Sadajivan Eveti Vailakshanyam Yuktam Nityananda Chid Rupatvad Bhajaniyatvam Chayuktam Iti Bhavaha. It stands to reason that the body of the divine personality of Godhead is different from this. It's not a dead corpse. It's always alive on account of its perpetual spiritual status, the body of the Lord. It is also reasonable that his body is worshipable, bhajaniya, because it comprises eternal bliss and consciousness. Someone who has what you want, you worship him. Someone's got a lot of money, you want that money, some of it, you worship the person. The Supreme Lord has got eternal bliss and consciousness. If you want that, you worship him. His body has eternal bliss and consciousness. So you can worship his body. Okay? Shri Rukmini, Shri Bhagavantam. The verse under discussion was spoken by Shri Rukmini to the personality of Godhead. And that is the 48th Anuchet. I'll read the commentary here. 1 second. The Mundaka and the Brihadaranyaka Upanishads seem to contradict one another. When one states that the Supreme Lord has no breath, and the other that the Vedas appear from his breath. Here's the Mundaka Upanishad. Divyo yamurtak purusha sabaya bhyantaro hyachaha aprano yamanak shubro yakshadat padatak padaha. The purusha is transcendental, without any visible form. He never takes birth, neither of an eternal gross body or of an inner subtle body. He has no life air, no mind, and is completely pure. He is outside the realm of unmanifest nature. Okay? And then the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad says, Evam va aresya mahato bhutasya nikshvasitam etad yad rigvedo yajur veda samavedo tarvangirasa itihasa puranam. And it continues after that. Thus indeed the breath of this supreme being constitutes the Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda, Atharva Angirasa Veda, Itihasa, and Purana. This apparent inconsistency is reconciled by understanding that the Supreme Lord has no imperfect material senses. Krishna's chief queen Rukmini spoke the verse under discussion in the course of the confidential talks between them, recorded in the 60th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam's 10th canto. She was shocked by Krishna's suggestion that she abandon him and find a better husband. And in her response, she contrasted Krishna's spiritual body with the living corpses to whom other women in this world are married. Okay, any questions about this anuchet?
Here it is mentioned, the Vedas emanate from the breathing of Lord. In that way, is the Vedanta Krit, is the compiler of the Vedas. And in some other contexts, it's mentioned, he's not the compiler of the Vedas.
Well, Vedanta Krit doesn't mean compiler of the Vedas. Vedanta Krit means compiler of the Vedanta Sutra. That's Dvaipayana Vyas. Then Krishna says, Veda Vid, I'm the knower of the Vedas. He doesn't say he's the compiler of the Vedas. Actually, Mahavishnu is breathing in and out constantly. The Vedas exist in Vaikuntha eternally. They come out in his breath, but he's not creating them by breathing them. He doesn't really create the jivas when they come out in his glance. The jivas exist before he glances. Similarly, the Vedas exist before he breathes. Okay, so it's not creating the Vedas. That's why he doesn't claim to be the author of the Vedas, because they're eternal. They always were there, so nobody ever wrote them. Okay? Yes.
After Atharvaveda, there is one word, Angiras. What's that?
Oh, it's just another name of the Atharvaveda. Because Angira Muni is one of the first authorities of the Atharvaveda. So very often in the Vedas, the Veda has his name attached to it. But it's the Atharvaveda. It's the same Atharvaveda.
Then why there is two names like separately with Atharvaveda? Already Atharva is there with Angirasa.
It's, I don't know. You'd have to ask whoever, you know. I mean, it's in the Vedas. It's called that in the Vedas. You can argue it doesn't have to be called that. But, I don't know. It's the Atharvaveda belongs to Angirasa. One thing is that the fourth Veda is not taken seriously. It's not even accepted by some Brahmins, like the followers of Bhrigu, look down on the Atharva Veda as inferior. So there's a class of Brahmins, followers of Angira. They're in charge of the Atharva Veda. And some of the other Brahmins consider them low class and their Veda to be low class. So it belongs especially to them. You know, some say that there are only three real Vedas. The fourth one is inferior. So it's because of that inferiority complex that it's connected with Angirasa. Other Brahmins, the Bhrigus, may not like it, but the Angirasas, it's their Veda.
But it's all combined by Veda Vyas, no?
Veda Vyas edited the Vedas at the beginning. Before the beginning of Kali Yuga. The Vedas existed millions of years before that.
I heard that before there was only one Veda, you know, like Yajurveda.
Well, and how is it that the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, millions of years ago, is talking about four Vedas? The Vedas existed, but they got mixed up. It's like, you know, there are four different kinds of mantras, and they were confused. They were kept like a person has a treasury of jewels and they're all mixed up. So someone had to come and sort them out. But there are four Vedas eternally. Okay? Just sometimes they get confused. People mix them up. Yes.
They are apparently saying like that the fourth Veda, there's not really any fourth Veda. They are saying like that because many places we see Trividya, like it's Trayi, and seemingly the Madhvas answer it off like this, saying that there are, it's not that there are no four Vedas. There are four Vedas eternally, but there are only three kinds. Three styles. There is Atharvaveda doesn't have a style of its own, which is different from the Rigveda.
It doesn't have its own style.
No, it's in the same style as in the Rigveda. So there are only three kinds in that way, but there are four Vedas. That's
okay. Well, okay, but we get into the discussion of different kinds of mantras. Actually, Atharvaveda is written in a sort of, I don't want to disagree, but the Atharvaveda does have its own language that's not exactly the same as the Rig Veda or Sama Veda or Yajurveda language. It's closer to classical Sanskrit, actually, the Atharvaveda. Sama Veda doesn't have its own kind of mantras because it uses the Rig mantras.
The language may be different, just saying about the style of chanting.
The style of chanting. Okay, there's no separate style of chanting. Okay.
Yeah. Yes. There are only three styles. Yes. There's only Rigveda, yes. Yajurveda, and Sama.
Okay. Anyway, and also, it's also explained that the first three Vedas are essential for the performance of sacrifice. You don't need so much the Atharva Veda unless something goes wrong in the sacrifice. Although there are some mantras from the Atharva Veda used in some of the Soma sacrifices. There is the Brahma priest, and he does have mantras from the Atharva Veda to chant, not just when mistakes are made, but it's minor. The use of the Atharva Veda in the actual sacrifices is very minor. So basically, the sacrifices are put together from the first three Vedas. Sarvika Prabhu.
I'm trying to reconcile this, that Hiranyakashipu was supposed not to be killed by somebody who is a doer, because it seems that Srila Jiva Goswami, in this second part of the Anushyeda, he explains that Krishna is a doer, like a potter. So, he gives an example that he just uses, like for example, we have potter who is making this pot. And he uses some instruments. So this is called Nimitta Karana, instrumental cause. So in this case, in the case of a normal living entity, he's also who is a doer. Also, he uses his body and his material senses, which are the Nimitta Karanas in this case.
Yes.
But in the case of Krishna, he also uses this body, but this body is eternal.
It's not an. We were discussing in a previous Anuchet that his limbs are not, his body is not instrumental. It's not a tool. So natasya karyam karanam. He doesn't have any karanam. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have any material tools. He doesn't have a body in that sense.
But he has spiritual tools, like his energies.
Right, but they're not considered. They're not strictly speaking tools in the same sense because they're not separate from him. They're not distinct from him.
But still, it seems that ultimately speaking, he is a doer, and
yes.
he wasn't supposed to kill Hiranyakashipu. So I don't know how to reconcile
it. Yes. Okay. Still, those two sentences are confusing. I still have to fix them. Okay. Anything else? Okay, if you don't mind, we'll stop here for today. The next Anuchet is a little long. And if you don't mind, we'll finish about 5 minutes early. Okay? Thank you, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Bhagavat Sandarbha Ki Jai.